Hello, my beautiful people, and welcome back. As always, my name's Hannah Hutchinson. I am your host and your conflict coach, and this is the Unconflicted Podcast. I'm actually so excited for this episode because one of the number one things you guys asked me for in the hiatus between podcasts is a Q&A. And I do plan on doing more of these, so don't worry, this is not going to be the only one. So basically the format of today is that I've taken some of the most common questions that I get either in my stories, in my DMs, or in person, and I have picked my favorites, and we are going to answer them today, and hopefully this will help so many of you. I want to take a short second to thank you guys for engaging with me on my social media, because that is how I know what you want. That is how I choose what episodes to do. That is how I pick topics. And in the future, that'll be how I choose guests. So I'm really, really thankful for all of you guys who are following me on social media and are engaging with my stories and with my posts, because that really makes this show what it is. Like I said last week, I am not here to waste any time. So without further ado, let's jump in. Some of these are pretty light and some of these are pretty heavy, but at the end of the day, I think they're all helpful and they're all kind of related and they're all very applicable to any kind of relationship. So as a reminder, even if these questions are worded in terms of dating relationships, marriages, partnerships, friendships, family relationships, it doesn't matter. They can still be applied to your situation. So the first thing we're going to talk about today is how much should we actually change for other people? And I feel like this question came up because I kind of mentioned this in last week's episode when I talked about how there are so many parts of us and who we are and how we present to the world that are flexible and malleable based on who we surround ourselves with and the influences that we allow. And I think it is important to talk about the limitations of that. Now, obviously, the answer to how much should we change for other people, along with the answer to a lot of the other questions on this list, is technically going to be it depends. And I remember when I was in school getting my degree in conflict resolution, that was one of the things my mentor told me, is that a lot of the questions I get when I work in conflict and work in relationships, the answer is usually going to be it depends, because every relationship is different. We're all unique humans with unique experiences, unique realities that we see these experiences through. And I've talked about that a lot on this podcast before, but the reason it continues to come up is because it is kind of the foundation of everything that I talk about. We are all unique. We are not always going to see situations the same way. We cannot expect other people to do the things that we would do or the things we think they should do. And so when we're talking about the parts of us that we do change for other people, it's important to recognize that there are boundaries to that, and those boundaries can change depending on the type of relationship, the type of person that you are, the type of person your partner or the other person is. All of these things are factors that play into the nature of the relationship inherently. And so it's up to each of us to decide how much we want to change for a person and how much of the things that we would need to change to make that relationship work are too centric to who we are that we can't change them. We're not willing to, because it wouldn't make sense for us. It would make us someone that doesn't feel like ourselves. It wouldn't feel authentic to us. And so the answer is you should change as much as you're willing to. And that doesn't mean you should change as much as possible. Changing as much as you're willing to change to make the relationship work is not the same thing as just changing as much as possible. So please don't get it twisted. What I mean by that is it's up to you to have the conversations in your relationships about the things that aren't aligned between you and decide together what changes are willing to be made and what changes are not willing to be made. What are your deal breakers? What are the things that you are not willing to change at all because they are part of who you are and they are important to you? And what things make you go, you know what? I don't actually know why I do that. I don't know why I feel that way. I guess I am kind of open to new ways of thinking about that. Because being open to changing the way you think or changing the way you act when you have new information or a new perspective is a normal and actually healthy way to approach life and relationships. And that does not mean that we should go around changing ourselves in order to make people like us or in order to make relationships work, if that means we're sacrificing things that are important to us. If you've listened to any of my previous podcasts, then you know a little bit about conflict styles. And compromise is one of the conflict styles, and so often we learn that compromise is the best case scenario because at least it's fair. And while fairness is important, fairness isn't always possible. And if we are so set on just being right or just getting what we want without thinking about why we want it or what we are actually wanting, then we're not going to actually get anywhere. And so what I tell people about compromise is that it is a really amazing and effective backup plan if collaboration isn't possible. Collaboration involves having these conversations, figuring out what is aligned and what isn't aligned, what matches, what's a mismatch, figuring out which of those mismatches are actually potential destructors of the relationship, and then figuring out what shifts need to be made in order to prevent those things from causing problems. That's the change that I'm talking about. That's the change that's going to make or break the relationship. And if it breaks it, that's okay. But if it destroys it piece by piece because you're unwilling to acknowledge the fact that it is incompatible, that's not okay. Okay, question two. Can being with a toxic partner make someone a toxic partner? I love this question, and I'll tell you why. This is something that happens so often in unhealthy relationships, and we aren't talking about it enough. Being with a toxic partner can absolutely make someone a toxic partner in the sense that being with someone who is consistently showing toxic behavior can be very, very confusing and disorienting. And confusion and disorientation are actual torture techniques. Those are things that really, really scramble the mind and are proven to bring out the worst behaviors and the worst mentalities in people. And so when you're in a relationship that is constantly flooded with toxic behavior, manipulation, gaslighting, confusion, back and forth, love bombing, all of these things play into the mentality that the partner then has about the relationship and about their safety, emotional safety, with that person or in that household. And I won't go into the entire hierarchy of needs, but when our base level needs are not met, we go into fight or flight. And when we are in fight or flight, that does not excuse bad behavior, but it does often create bad behavior. And so when you follow that cycle, you can see how a toxic partner can create a toxic partner, but it's not that the behavior is just rubbing off on them. It is an actual psychological process that that partner goes through that makes them retaliate in a way that is self-preservation. Their nervous system feels unsafe and unsure, and that impacts self-trust. So then they can't trust their reality. They can't trust the decisions they want to make. They can't trust the times they want to speak up for themselves. They can't trust that there's gonna be a resolution. They can't trust that there is a possible exit or way forward. And that's where the stuck feeling comes from. And that's what keeps people stuck in toxic relationships and behaving in a toxic way. And so a lot of times when, especially when these fights or these feuds with celebrities are public and people start having this commentary on who's right, who's wrong, who's in the right, who's in the wrong, at the end of the day, we may never actually know what started it. All we are seeing is the snowball effect of bad behavior causing bad behavior, causing bad behavior, causing bad behavior. Because even the person who started the bad behavior in the first place, we can say it's their fault, we can blame them, but at the end of the day, the same effect can be had on them once the partner starts showing the toxic behavior. It just goes back and forth and it's a toxic cycle. And that's why a lot of times the only way to break that cycle is to separate. And that doesn't necessarily mean separate permanently. Sometimes that just means separate long enough to reset. Cue last week's episode. But I feel like this segues well into the next question, which is, well, actually, it's kind of a summary of a few questions that I got. One of the questions is, when do you know a relationship is no longer worth it? And how do I stop falling for potential? And then another question is, how do I define a lukewarm relationship? And how do I know if I'm in one? And so to me, those questions are similar in that I feel like they can be summarized in, like, how do I know if my relationship is stagnant? And is it over if that happens? How do I know if it's over when that happens? And I think it's important for all of you guys to hear someone say that a relationship having boring times, a relationship going stagnant for a little while, that is so normal. There are going to be ebbs and flows. There are going to be waves of affection and love, and you're on the same page. And then there are just going to be months or years where you're just not really on the same page because so much has happened. Everything's changing. You're both in adjustment and transition, and it's just hard. And for some people, that is genuinely a deal breaker because they don't see a way forward. And sometimes there may not be one. And so that's when those relationships end, and that's okay. But sometimes it genuinely is just a phase of life, a phase of the relationship. Sometimes it has to do with something one partner is going through individually, but of course it's going to impact the relationship because the relationship you have with your partner permeates every single piece of your life if it's a healthy relationship. Well, and I guess in a bad way if it's an unhealthy relationship. But I also want to address the phrase lukewarm relationship, because I do genuinely believe most relationships are going to have phases where they feel lukewarm. But a lukewarm relationship is a relationship that doesn't have passion, fire, affection, spark, intimacy. And that doesn't just mean sexually, okay? I use these words that a lot of people associate with sexuality, and it does mean a little bit of that too, but it means in all areas of the relationship, emotionally, intellectually, spiritually. There needs to be, in at least some of these areas, a level of passion and fire and intensity that connects you. And if you don't have things that connect you in a way that feels really deep and really powerful, then the relationship is going to feel lukewarm. And I know lukewarm relationships that work, and I know lukewarm relationships that don't work. But some people are just people who need passion, who need fire, who need fun, who need deep connection that lights them up. And when you have that, you know you have that. And when you don't feel that way with your partner, it's okay, but it's also very, very clear. So the second piece of this is, how do I know if that means it's the end? And that is 100% up to you. Again, it depends. Don't hate me. But what I can tell you is that if you have a clear enough idea of the relationship that you want, if you've thought about it enough, if you've journaled about it, if you've talked to your friends about it, if you've got a Pinterest board about it, if your TikTok algorithm knows what it is, you know what you want from a relationship. And one, you're not getting that. Two, you've done things to try to get the relationship to that point. You've communicated your needs, you've talked about what's not working, and you've come at it with a teamwork approach to want to make the relationship actually work for you, and it's still not working, then it probably is an incompatible relationship. And again, I wanna remind you guys that all of this stuff goes for partnerships, relationships, but it also goes for family relationships, friendships, roommate relationships, sibling relationships, workplace relationships. It can be applied to all of these things. And the next question is, how do I know if someone is the one? It's kind of on the other side of that. What is it that actually determines whether or not we can be together long term and this is a relationship that could actually go somewhere, right? And the answer is repair. John and Julie Gottman, who have studied love and relationships for literally years on years now, they are the leading experts in love and relationships. And in their research, they proved that the number one indicator of whether or not a relationship could last happily and healthily in the long term is the way they repaired after conflict and during conflict. The partners that approached conflict situations with a teamwork mentality, it's us versus the problem mentality, lasted significantly longer than the couples who approach the problem as a you versus me mentality. And so if the person you're with isn't willing to approach conflict in a productive way, that doesn't mean they're not the one, but it does mean that that is the number one indicator that that relationship isn't going to last long term if they are not willing to get better at the way they handle conflict. And the same goes for you if it's the other way around. Both of these questions, the ones about lukewarm relationships, how do I know if it's time to end the relationship? When do I know if it's no longer worth it? How do I know if it is worth it? All of these things come down to how well you're communicating with your partner. And it's so funny that all of these questions are coming back to communication, because for me, that is very much at the heart of what I do. I call myself a conflict coach. I work in conflict and relationships. That is what my education is in. But my very first degree that I got is in interpersonal communication. And the way we communicate verbally, non-verbally, inter and intrapersonally, the way we communicate with ourselves and with other people, the way we communicate with people we're comfortable with versus people we're not comfortable with. All of these things are so interesting to me, and it's so cool and validating that you guys have questions about this as well, because these are all of the questions I had that I literally went and got a whole degree to try to get the answers to. I tell people all the time, I cope with trauma by gaining information. That's why I got the degrees that I have. And so all that to say, if you are willing to sit down and have open, honest communication with your partner about what's working in the relationship, what the things might be that could come in between you, and how to prevent those things, what precautions are you gonna take? Where are you gonna give? Where are they gonna give? Are we going to be focused on whether or not it's fair, or are we going to be focused on building a life that works for both of us in a way we both love that's healthy and happy? If you try to communicate in this way, and the person you're communicating with, whether it's your partner or your mother or your roommate or your sister or your boss, if they're not willing to hear you and they're not willing to address the problem together in that teamwork mentality, then that is a red flag. That is information for you, and that should tell you where your next boundary should go. So speaking of boundaries and communication, I got this question and it really just stuck in my head because I have such strong opinions on this, and I'm so glad to finally have a platform to speak on this. So a few of you actually asked, essentially, what do I think about the impact that social media has had on communication, on dating, on just maintaining relationships in general? And my answer is that it has made it so much harder. And also, it has made it so much easier. Essentially, I can see both sides of this argument, right? And I've done a lot of research on this. This topic is all over my For You page right now. I am very, very passionate about the fact that being constantly available and visible to everyone in your life or everyone in the world, if you have that kind of platform, being constantly available and visible is such a new phenomenon in the grand scheme of things. Even 50 years ago, if you called someone on their home phone and they weren't home, you left a message and they got back to you if they wanted to. And now we send someone a text, and if they don't answer, we FaceTime them. And it's like, at what point do we get our time? At what point do we get to decide what we do with our time and our energy? And why currently do other people get to decide that for us, because it's seen as rude if we don't answer or ignore a text? And don't get me wrong, like, I feel like my friends are going to listen to this and they're going to laugh because I am queen of responding immediately. But I also am a strong advocate for do not disturb, for sleep mode, for putting your phone down for a few hours and just existing in the world with the people or the pets who love you. I guess I've been talking generally about technology, but social media specifically has made so much of us visible, but we're having to put so much work into curating the parts of us that we're showing other people, when that time and that energy could be spent actively working on ourselves to be a better person in real life, so that that will then be reflected in the way we show up on social media. And I think too many of us are putting the social media perception before what's actually going on inside of us. And so then when we start trying to build relationships, and then there's social media involved, and there's expectations with social media, you need to be putting me on your story. Why am I not in your profile picture? Why is your Snapchat score still going up? Why did I see this app on your phone? Why do you follow her? Why did you like that? All of these things are just playing into the insecurity that we can't do anything right because we're always being visible and perceived. And don't get me wrong, you should always do the right thing. You should always be a good, respectable person and partner, regardless of whether or not people are watching. But so many people do have a genuine fear and anxiety of the constant perception of being on social media, but they're on it anyway, because at this point, who's not on social media, right? But a lot of times the people who take breaks from social media, the people who are like, no, I'm taking a hiatus, it's just not healthy for me, or the people who unfollow all the celebrities because they just don't want to do the comparison game anymore, the people who go, you know what? I don't care if my man has social media. I don't care if he posts me. I don't care what happens. It's just, it's whatever. We got our own pages. We can do what we want with them. As long as he's not being disrespectful, we're good. That's the mentality that's going to protect your relationship in the era of social media. But if you have that anxiety, it doesn't mean something's wrong with you. It just means that the world we live in has really severely impacted the way you see relationships and the expectations you have. And it's probably time to ask yourself a few questions about the meaning behind the things you're expecting. What is it you're gaining from someone posting you on their story? What is it you're losing from someone liking something you wouldn't have liked? And address those specific issues, not the actions that are being taken on social media. Because if there are actual value mismatches involved, then you're not going to get to that by fighting about what they have or haven't done on social media. And so I think a lot of times it becomes a distraction, almost like a red herring, because we're fighting about social media, but we're really fighting about is the way someone's showing up for us, whether or not we feel like someone's proud of us, our security on whether or not we are the only person they've chosen, and obviously so many other things. And so when we start fighting about the thing that doesn't matter instead of the things that are actually really bothering us, but we're labeling them as something else, that's what's keeping us from actually getting to a resolution and making progress in the relationship. And so while I am all over social media, you'll probably hear my voice asking you to follow me on social media later in this episode. Like, I am so pro social media because there are so many things it genuinely can do, and it has provided so much access and so much community. There are so many good things if you use it for those good things. But it can also be a distraction to relationships because it comes between us and the problem. And so if we're trying to approach the conflict with an us versus the problem, that teamwork mentality, we can't because social media is in the way. And so I think we have to be aware of that and know how to work around that. And it can be a healthy, if not fun, addition to any relationship. And before I close this episode out, I also wanted to answer a couple questions you guys had about like what it is that I do and how to move forward with the information that I give you. So one of you guys said, I took the conflict quiz and the compatibility quiz. I know my attachment style and my personality type, which is already more than most people. So major props for that. But I don't know what to do with this information. What's next? This is an amazing question, because we can gather all the information that we want, and we can just hoard it, and we can say, look at all of this stuff I know about myself. I'm so self-aware. Look how self-aware I am. I know all of these things. But if we don't know what behavior to apply that information to, then nothing about us changes. We're just the same person. We just know how to label ourselves better, which again is helpful. Don't get me wrong. That is helpful to know the actual words and the language to use for the things that you do and the behaviors and patterns and habits that you have. But if you don't know what it says about the behaviors that need to change and the ways that you can grow and become better, then the information really isn't doing anything for you. It's more of a trophy at that point. If you know your conflict style, if you know your compatibility score, if you know your attachment style or your Myers-Briggs personality test or your Enneagram, if you know all of these things, use it. And when I say use it, I mean communicate it. What's the point of having the language to talk about the things that are going on inside of you, your motivations for what you do, if you're not actually willing to communicate it to people? So when you can tell that someone doesn't understand what's going on, when you can tell that there's a conflict brewing because you're not on the same page with someone, when you're dating or finding a roommate and you're trying to figure out whether or not you're aligned, use this information to determine whether or not these people that are in your life or are potentially in your life are actually people that you're compatible with. And like I said at the beginning, the way you approach these conversations or the specific things that you are going to need to do based on what your type is or what your weaknesses are or what your results are, all of those things are going to depend on you and your life and your relationships and your influences. And if that is something you're struggling to figure out, if you're struggling to piece it all together, that is what I do. I can help you do that. One of the other questions that I got that I get every single time I do an Ask Me Anything is, what is a conflict coach? And it's such a fair question. I totally get it. A conflict coach is still very, very new. It's a growing industry. I'm the only one in my area, and I haven't met a lot of other conflict coaches. But a lot of what I do is helping people figure out how to become the person they need to be to have the relationships that they want. For some people, it is relationships with their parents or relationships with their children. For some people, it's they're in college and they're having major issues with their roommate and moving out isn't an option. And so they need to figure out how to coexist. For some people, it is relationships or marriages. For some people, it's siblings. For some people, it's someone they work with that they can't quit their job. They can't move to a new place. They can't get out of the situation. So they have to learn how to exist amicably in a way that's productive. All of these things are in my realm of expertise, and I do them in all different capacities. I work one-on-one with people. I do speaking engagements, teamwork trainings. I work with teenagers all the way up to executives. I work with singles. I work with couples. I work with groups. Obviously, I have pre-made offerings, and these are the things that I do regularly. But one of the things I'm most proud of is my ability to listen to what you need and fill those gaps for you. Figure out what is actually going to take you to the next level and set you up for a life that has healthy, happy relationships with the people you genuinely care about. And also with the people you don't really care about that much, but have to coexist with. And that can take so many shapes and forms. Sometimes the answer just has to be, it depends. But you can always reach out to me and we can figure out a way for us to work together and figure out what's next for you and figure out how I can help you move forward. And I am always, always, always open to those conversations. With that, I might as well jump into the closing. If you like today's episode, please like, share, and or subscribe so that this kind of content can reach more people like you. For behind the scenes, exclusive content, and all the things I've talked about in this episode, follow me on TikTok or Instagram at Your Conflict Coach with two H's. And for comments, questions, submissions, or anything business or podcast related, you can email me at yourconflictcoachwithtwoh's@gmail.com or the podcast Instagram at @theunconflictedpod. And as a final reminder, this podcast is for educational and entertainment purposes only, which means it should not be substituted for any kind of therapy or legal or medical advice. And as always, any sources or references that I mentioned will be available in the show notes, wherever you're watching or listening. I love all of you beautiful people so much. And as always, I am Hannah, your host and your conflict coach. And I will see you next week on the Unconflicted Podcast. Bye.